This is a production of Cornell University.
I'll go.
Housing meeting, February 17th, 2011.
Yes.
The time is 4:47. I'm calling the February 17th Student Assembly meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Here.
Present.
Unexcused. Late. Unexcused. Unexcused. Here. Excuse. Yeah, she's sick. Excuse. Unexcused. He's here.
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 Yes.
Here. Also, Ben just walked in,
yeah.
So Charlie Feng is present. All right. Approval of the minutes. The February 10th minutes were sent out. I don't know if you saw them. They're kind of short. So, but are there any amendments to the minutes? Yeah. Which ones were sent out by Melissa? Yes. All right. Well,
I'm going to do it first.
All right. Well, we'll push off the approval notes to the next meeting.
Open microphone. Looking at options. Really loud. So.
Okay. It's loud. Okay. Open microphone. So if we have any members of the audience who would like to talk on something that is not currently on the agenda, please feel free to come up to the table now. Seeing none, I'm going to move to close open microphone session.
For all those in the audience, there are copies of the agenda right there on the corner of the table. If you'd like to see them, feel free to grab them.
Next, we are going to jump to an Afghan report number 3, mental health and means restriction update by Gilbert Delgado, Tim Marshall, and is Dean Hubble going to be part of this or not? I don't think so. Thank you for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us back. When I was here last time, I showed you one of the earliest versions of a diagram we were putting together to summarize the overall approach that the university is taking to student mental health. And we have a new and improved version of this, which I think will be easier to see and be able to help us set the context for the means restriction study a little more effectively. And so I'm going to walk you through this framework and preface it by saying this is an adaptation from the framework developed by the National Suicide Prevention Resource Center and the JET Foundation. But you could just, at least for those of you who may not remember, I guess what I identify myself with, my name is Tim Marshall, Class of 82, Director of Mental Health Initiatives at GNS. So the diagram you see down on the right there is what we are calling our wheel. And I've mentioned that this is the same presentation that we gave to the employee assembly yesterday, and we'll be giving to the CPSA, and we're going to be going around to all the assemblies over the coming weeks. So this diagram represents our comprehensive approach and also represented in the context of our overall philosophy of creating an ever more caring community. So the elements of this, I'm going to walk through one at a time, starting at the top. I'm going to go to the next slide, please. The first component is fostering a healthy educational environment. Now, not all the things I'm going to be describing might formally be understood as the mental health initiatives, but they all contribute in important ways to well-being of our students. So, beginning last year with the inclusion of triage and well-being as a priority within the university's strategic plan, the efforts of the Council on Mental Health and Welfare, which you are represented at, the undertaking of faculty and leaders conducting a review of the academic environment and its impact on student well-being, as well maintaining academic rigor. Looking at the leadership efforts of this body and others, the Liberty Spirit efforts from last year, and I understand that there are some things being planned for the spring as well, and I commend you for that. All of the efforts that we do on campus to foster a climate of respect, stability, and inclusion are an important part of the equation, as are our alcohol initiatives and efforts to cultivate and appreciate and exposure to our natural resources on campus. All of our work on efforts to promote life skills and resilience, in particular fostering social connectedness through our diversity programs, our residential programs, and specific strategies looking at acquisition of life skills. Next, please. We're also trying to increase health-seeking behavior. Criminal Law is matters by determining leadership on this, as has President Gordon himself talking about, if you learn nothing else, lawyer or no.
Learn to ask for help.
All our efforts around identifying individuals in need of care. So notice and response program is sort of good about it. But there's a number of strategies in place throughout the campus to try to help cultivate a network of eyes and ears who can effectively respond when people are struggling. And directing people to get health services for our medical and mental health services is part of our overall approach. And I would note a couple things here that in counseling psychological services, we have same-day triage, trying to get people in as soon as possible. Saturday hours is a new component of that as well. We have coordinated crisis management, not only through our crisis managers in the student's office, but through the 24/7 services of Gannett, and we have coordinated the other resources for the part of that. The last part of this wheel has to do with restricting access to the means to die by suicide. And if I could distill this, what I would say is that when it comes to preventing suicide, minds matter and means matter. That when I do an assessment of an individual who may be suicidal, one of the things that I, as a clinician, and all of my colleagues are trying to figure out is, does this person have intent to die, do they have access to the means to die that they're thinking about? So are they thinking about using a weapon, or are they thinking about jumping? We're always trying to figure out how you restrict access to pills or something like that, and we do the same thing in relation to our brain. And so right now, we are in the process of conducting a study with the City of Ithaca in partnership with the firm that Governor Delgado will be updating you about. And that is a little bit of the background on why we are pursuing these restrictions for the overall way. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Gilbert Delgado for an update on our progress.
Great. Actually, before we shift, are there any questions on the presentation regarding the mental health initiatives that Gannett is undertaking? All right. Seeing none, we'll go directly to the means restriction, as in the fence.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for being here.
Last time we got together, we talked a little bit about the process and how we were going to deliver this project. We had a little hiccup around the holidays. The firm that we hired off the staff had some internal issues that had to resolve. And that I'm relieved to be able to report that we were able to, that the firm also saw was dissolved and out of that thing we called not created. But we got the same team. We got the same folks. We were able to build on the work that we ever did. We believe we had the right people. Nadar Tarani is a lead designer, a very thoughtful and expressive designer that I think, we had picked the right person, and I'm delighted that we changed. continuing with the vice design service, all the same pieces. So that certainly is really difficult. And just to, just example of the same thing, we want these interventions to disappear to foreground the importance of the view, the historic aspect of certain bridges, and the prospect into the city, landscape, and campus. In other words, it's not to try to call attention to the devices themselves, but in some way that they themselves actually dematerialize in some way possible and actually facilitate the appreciation around the landscape. So let's restate again the processes which we have designed to be very collaborative with the community, with the city of Edmonton, with the student body. We are today roughly where that might fall. We are at the end of a period called pre-kinetic. And we finished the first section called assessment and research. And this is basically they came on together. We had a variety of outreaches and presentations both in the city and on campus to gather information, to learn about the bridges themselves, to learn about our Cornell Atlantic community, and then to also explore means restriction in terms of what's happening in other areas. So things like why we're going. Different ways to approach the problem that have been it was solved by the folks. Department of Transportation, that. So I don't think we'll do that. Okay, next one. A rigid banking system, which is, I think we've left to watch on the state. Using glass and the left of the top of the Rockefeller Center, something required a lot of maintenance, but nonetheless, what we did was we explored a variety of means. Material, technique, so we can actually use that as a baseline as we're on as we go forward. San Francisco is a project that is currently being undertaken. It's the number one suicide spot in the world. And then what started to emerge were the fabrications that were somewhat transparent at a distance. First, kind of metal meshes. And then this is the material that they seem to be very much interested in. These tensile steel meshes, stainless steel, kind of a finer wire, and then something that is a distance of 20 feet or something. It was very difficult to see. Next slide. And here's an example of it. This is the Stadium Center in Austria. And if you look on the slide on the right, the slide on the left shows you how the mesh is actually enclosing the walkway, but you could fairly see it as a net, as almost a fish net, on the right hand slide. So when I show you these images of potential ideas, you keep in mind that we're talking about is a fabric that it's almost that fabric. So where we are today, the city of Cornell have reviewed that first initial assessment of what is the things we're working with, next slide. And now we're almost at the 5-8 stage of what's called pre-schematic. And pre-schematic is, we divide the bridges into three different typologies. Pedestrian bridges that are lighter, vehicular bridges that are heavier, and then the stone arch bridge, which in and of itself is a different type of category. So that we can actually, and then we took three different views of each one of those types so that we can satisfy ourselves on the fact that we look at not just one preconceived solution, but a variety of solutions and share that with our community. So what I'm going to show you now are some developmental designs. These are not an actual pre-schematic. That won't be due until the first week of March. Right? And we're going to have a very large roadblock in the first week of March. Your campus, community and the city showing you the results of this declaration. But what I'm going to show you is to give you some general idea, a feel for some of the ideas that are being kicked around. Next slide. So these are the three different bridge types. Next slide. So the vehicular bridges fall in those three different locations. Heavier, you would treat them in a different way. Next slide. And the pedestrian bridges, three of them, right? That are lighter, more ephemeral, more lightweight. And then the store exists by itself. Let's take a look at the Stewart Avenue Bridge and in terms of what these are possibilities. One thing that they did to organize their thinking was they made a matrix. On the left-hand side are some possible materials, and then on the top four axes are geometric configurations. For example, what would happen if there were a net completely underneath it? What would happen if there were nets on the sides of each of the embankments? What would happen if it were a vertical system? And what would happen if it were fully enclosed? And I'll show you a little bit of that picture. So here is the Stewart Avenue Bridge, right? And here is the idea of something that comes off the side, and it is a net tech system. Now remember, this which you will probably see are the struts, right? Because the fence itself will be very, very, very light and airy. And then this is a rigid solution. You have to be able to squint to see it, but the front, as opposed to, again, this is why we hired a firm that was based in design as opposed to an engineering slash security firm. For example, let's say a straight DOT design would be a straight rail across the top. But what would happen if we dip the geometry just a little bit to pick up the curvature of the bottom support? Makes it appear to be less rigid, more formal, more sympathetic with the surrounding landscape. Next slide. Now what would happen if you put a net in there? That's how it looks from beneath it. Next slide. Or a net that actually is connected to the gorge and not the bridge itself. Next slide. And then the stone arch bridge being a very special case unto itself. What if we put a glass panel base system? Now, I don't think we'll end up with glass because glass is something that needs to be pristine for sure. If it's not pristine, it looks like junk. But nonetheless, you know, let's take a look at it, you know. But that's how it looked like if it were very clean when I was right there. And then when they first talked about the idea of enclosure, I thought, well, no one would go for that, but this is not something that we would see. But what if you took an artful stance for this, right? What if you thought of the meaning description? And part of it is having a multiplicity of meaning, so it's not just a fence, but that in fact it becomes perhaps the idea of cathedral with obelisk on top, where you can actually start to sculpt the experience. You can actually create seating areas at the bottom of the bar system. Excellent. And what if you start to bend and articulate the geometry of the fencing system in such a way that it's more organic and perhaps is resonating with what you're seeing behind it? So there is something that might go up, maybe 10 or 11 feet, but because it's not rigid and spherical, it becomes more palatable, more aesthetic. So I really like the way these letters look at the back of that. It's an accidental design thing, but I use the white font with this panel. So the next major milestone, I just want to, you know, underscore the idea that this is a collaborative process, that early March we will actually submit a pre-schematic submittal, which is three different variations of the three different types, right? We'll go full court press on that. You know, we'll be giving presentations here, or some of the other places in campus in the city. In fact, we're scheduled for two back-to-back days of presentations about these. So everyone will be a website where you can actually log in your comments, right? And we will collect them and take them very seriously. And that's basically where we were, where we are today, and where we'll be in the real city.
All right. Thank you. So now we'll go to questions. If anybody in the audience would like to ask a question as well, please raise your hand and I'll call on you. First is Representative Smith.
But just wondering more in terms of programming to the public.
Also, before you answer, just really quickly, we do have Ann Kinney here from the library, so if we may have to end the discussion in about 5 to 10 minutes, so just we are in time constraints.
Thank you. So thanks for those questions. I would note that this presentation that I just shared with you, I shared this morning with all of the residence hall directors and other staff in the Dean of Students Office. We're having the very same discussion in response to your questions, because there's a lot of thinking going on about how we engage residents like that, the RAs, in new ways for training in the coming year. We're also, one of the things we're focusing on is talking about how to cultivate sources of strength for students. Not only identify the students that are struggling, but how do we develop the capacities, the social connections, and things that will help students really thrive as well, and endure and perhaps setbacks and learn how to cope with some of those challenges. So we're thinking on a number of levels within the residential area. And with the faculty, there's several discussions that are occurring about the academic environment, the calendar, advising practices. In terms of friend-to-friend specifically, we've gone past the College of Engineering's freshman classes that we've talked about before, and have done a number of these trainings with mentors, the biology mentors, for example, Cornell Outdoor Education student leaders, a number of groups that we're doing with that. So we're always open for suggestions. We would welcome in opportunities. If any of you are connected to student groups in any way who would be interested in this type of program, we'd be happy to try to make that happen. And if you have any connections within your respective colleges and thoughts about courses that something like this could be infused into, we'd be delighted to talk with you about that.
All right, thank you. Next is Representative Bruce.
My question goes to, I first want to say thank you so much for the work you're doing. But if you talk to other universities or other administration in different places, starting to see issues like New York University or College of William & Mary, which also had a lot of, student harm issues, have you talked to administrators?
So thank you for that specific question about NYU. In fact, when we were dealing last spring with the immediate aftermath of the suicide in our gorges, the very first person that we contacted was Henry Chung, the Vice President for Student Health at New York University and a Cornell alumnus and psychiatrist. And he was, Dr. Chung was extremely helpful in walking us through how they had dealt with the crisis of jumping deaths on their campus. And one of the first things he said was addressing these restrictions is critical to the equipment.
All right. Are there anybody in the audience who has any questions? All right. Please, could you just come on up, state your name and year for the record, and then feel free to ask your question.
Okay. Yeah. 2012.
All right.
Granted, there will be some comments to contradict other comments. You know, I can't promise you will find a line of continuity in the comments in an actual design manifestation. But what it will allow us to do is to understand what is the community sentiment regarding the work, and then adjust it accordingly. Of our things that are going to arise, we'll address that. But that's how we'll approach it. We'll combine the comments and try to develop a narrative that actually tries to capture the spirit of that discussion. So that's
And the last question goes to Professor Angul.
I was just wondering, with the net designs, and Cornell has a history, and even on the 161 things to do, throw a flaming pumpkin off the gorge. into the gorge, off the bridge. And as far as things that are thrown off collecting under there. How is that taken care of in the net design?
Thank you for the question.
How are you going to accommodate the list?
We tried to learn that. Heard that one before. But we brought that up to the architect even this morning in the discussion with staff. That came up. How about branches? How about leaves? You know,
wait till.
But, you know, then perhaps there should be some idea of the kind of mechanical device that actually can shake the thing or something. You know, we'll bring that back to the architect. But I think the same issue in San Francisco will have in terms of collecting debris.
All right. Thank you for coming and making this presentation. So before we move on, I just want to... Okay. So we are going to go a little bit out of order since Slope Day is here. So I'd like to invite Slope Day to the front of the room and present and make your presentation. Everybody, please come on up. Bring up chairs if you need them. Break the news.
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
Give me one of these.
Who is it? I don't know.
Hi, everyone. My name is Peggy G. I am class of 2011, the Slope Day Program Reward Chairman for this year. And I have Kirkadeep Singh, my vice chair, and Peter Davis, our collections director, with me. The first thing we wanted to talk about today is our plan on greening Slope Day, especially with respect to the recent Resolution 35. In the past, we've been improving on Slope Day and greening matters by using all compostable diningware. We set up actual composting bucket or bins on the slope so that we can reduce the trash that ends up littered all over the slope. And we have started recycling water bottles, which is something that we started recently. This year, the dining is specifically looking to eliminating one of the contents that would not only reduce emissions, but it would mean eliminating one of the grills and therefore all of those fun things to do with, but it would also lower the cost of dining foods every year, so it's kind of a win-win for everybody. With respect to Resolution 35, we have been exploring alternatives to using the plastic and water bottles that everybody so much knows and hates, even though I count four bottles on your table. In recent years, we have switched from a conventional water bottle to an Ecofina bottle, which is approximately 30% less packaging of the water. We also have started collecting bottles off the slope and bringing them to a recycling center. Last year, we collected about 44% of the water bottles distributed, which is kind of a big deal. We're looking to get a little bit higher this year, which is still a pretty successful program. We have been looking into a way to eliminate bottled water from the slope completely. However, there are a couple of roadblocks. We looked into an open tap system where people can bring their nalgene through their sinks and fill up the water as they need it. The problem there is mostly a distribution problem. We wouldn't be able to get the water quickly to people who need it as efficiently as we can just handle a bottle of water. There's also contamination issues because where there's an open tap, we're going to be washing our hands, washing our faces, and possibly getting sick. And so we're trying to really work on those issues. For the next year, or for 2011, we are looking to eliminate plastic water bottles. We are looking to continue to go with the program of recycling and the organization that we already have. So that water bottle remains the question.
Well, thank you for that. I'm sure the chair of the Environmental Committee would be very happy if we were here to hear this. But questions regarding the water... Well, actually, finish your entire presentation, and then we'll go to general questions, all right?
All right, then I'm going to pass it over to you.
All right.
Hi, my name is Peter Jacobs. I'm the selection director for Slope Day Program. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the process that I went through this year and figuring out the formula for Slope Day. So we started off really just looking at the feedback from last year's. There was some negative attention drawn to Drake because he was sort of seen as a one-hit wonder at the time, he was compared to new. So we knew straight off that we wanted to find someone who had more of a career, but a back catalog, who had a number of hits that people would recognize and would be excited about. So that was one of the things we were definitely looking into. We had several selections open for a meeting at the beginning of the semester, and from there compiled a list, which turned into a poll. which is sent out to the student body and eventually completed by around 3,000 people. We then took that poll and convened a selection committee, went over the numbers, and sort of two of the trends that we found is that people wanted one strong headliner, and people wanted hip-hop as their main act, although they did want a variety of genres in the lineup as a whole. So from there, that sort of brings us where we are now, and we're very pleased to announce that Nelly will be headlining Club Day.
All right.
No idea.
So that's really all we have at this point. We're still doing a little bit of research on opening acts, but as soon as you know, you'll know, and everybody will know. So we're very excited about the.
All right, thank you. Again, if there's anything in the audience we'd like to ask a question, we'll have our parliamentarian go out with a list, and feel free to sign up, and I'll recognize you when he comes back to the list. First is EVP Mensa on the question speakers list.
Thank you. First and foremost, congratulations on choice and oath. My question, I guess it's more of a concern. You know, I'm just curious to know how and why names of acts continue to leak everywhere first before you guys come to the SA. I don't know if it's anything on your end, you know, but if it is, you know, I mean, you know, I think that the process definitely needs to be tightened. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do understand the concern. This year, actually, we were very excited that the Sun only lasted a couple of hours, and this was the stage when we were going to fully announce it. But we do try to keep everything under wraps as much as we can. It's such a safe secret, everybody gets really excited. We don't know exactly where everything happened. I was in contact with the Sun earlier this week, and they wanted to publish Monday, and I told them we don't have a confirmation yet, and that was one of the things we wanted to wait until we brought it to you. So actually, up until this morning, there was uncertainty as to whether or not we would be doing an interview with the body. But this year, everybody on the board was very much doing their part to keep everything under wraps, and so we will continue to improve, but unless there's a way to completely shut down the internet and all
problems like that,
I'm not sure where people
can go. All right. Next on the speakers list is Representative Gulbajani.
You said you'd be eliminating 1 through 10, so is there another one?
Okay, so, yeah. Don't worry.
Right, so the discussion that was started by Diane just a couple of weeks ago, as for the numbers last year, the hot sales in the hamburger, which would seem to be a big seller, actually just the aggregate for the lease. Instead of the turkey leg and the, you know, the pulled pork sandwiches, etc., that did extremely well. So everything apart from the hamburgers and hot dogs on Slope is, you know, straight on the plate. It doesn't require any burners or any grills. It doesn't require any kind of tents. So the tents that we have are fireproof tents that are needed for the service. If we eliminate hot dogs and hamburgers, and this will be decided next Wednesday when Dan meets, and trying to substitute these items with something that's feasible. If that does happen, that will reduce the cost of having 5%, which is many times more expensive than a regular one. And in addition to cutting down emissions from burners and grillers, in addition to cutting down manpower to actually man these burners, you know, there's so, you know, just adding on that, there's a lot of plus points to having to cut the items off the list.
We're not eliminating the food option, we're substituting it with a different one that would be more appropriate.
Next is Representative Bajaj. All right, so at that point, we have exhausted our speakers list, and we have to move on to the next presentation. So again, Slope Day, thank you very much for coming, and congratulations. All right, next presentation is by University Librarian Ann Kenny. Please come forward. Thank you for waiting. welcome to the Zoom Assembly. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you for having me back. I wanted to talk to you today about the new strategic plan that the library has just rolled out, but I also know there has been considerable interest in unit library reviews. So I brought a paper copy of that. And also on the back of the sheet is, I know a colleague of mine met with a subcommittee earlier this week on library user seating and whether there was sufficient capacity for students. And in fact, our user seating is skyrocketed with the introduction of the library.
Yeah.
There are questions about the unit library review.
Yeah,
but I'm very excited that we are just about to unveil our library strategic plan for the next 5 years up through the successful centennial. It was really important for us to do several things to align with the university strategic plan, both directly as it related to the library, but also indirectly based on its aspirations. As we hear with the strategic plan called for once for now, I think we also need to emphasize we are one library which is distinguished by the diversity of its individual parts. I think the future of research libraries are critically embedded in strategic partnerships. You may have heard that we are very strong in a union with Columbia University Library to expand our reach and to gain greater access to resources. I would tell you it hasn't been officially announced yet, but as of June 1, Cornellians who are in New York City will have full privilege to Columbia's library.
That's great.
Which is terrific.
That's awesome.
And while we recognize that the digital world is really upon us and that everything becomes more and more integrated with technology, we will safeguard our collections and records, and particularly in those areas that continue to rely on print. And finally, it is critical for us not to think about our services from the inside out, but from the outside in, and to engage with our user community very much. So, these are the seven goals. I'll go through them briefly. We're going to go to the first one. We have a dramatic ambition here, which is to ensure access to full scholarly record wherever it may reside throughout the world. We will do this through an aggressive effort to redirect resources to our collections. We have in danger of falling out of the top 10 of research libraries in North America. We'll also do it through our collective partnerships. I mentioned two cool. We will also, in March, unveil the fact that Harvard and MIT are joining BorrowDirect. So if any of you need BorrowDirect, you will now have access. We'll go from 50 million volumes to 70 million volumes. What kind of volume? The month. And then another interesting thing is we are negotiating with major research libraries around the world to provide specialized access to Cornell faculty and students. Beginning with Tsinghua University in Beijing, their special collections will now open in special ways that no other research library in the country will have access to. Goal two is to, it's no secret, using the online system in the library is really cumbersome. Most of you start your research outside of the library and maybe grudgingly go there when you absolutely need to. And we've set ourselves an ambitious goal is to dramatically improve those systems for finding and using scholarly resources. One of the things I would point to is that we also want to think about the kinds of uses you're making of technology. So as you move more to smartphones and apps rather than the web, how do we follow in that footstep? And two, we set ourselves a grand challenge to develop virtual browsing capabilities that are knowledgeable to and build upon what you can do as you browse stats. Goal three. Deals with looking at the full range of research and scholarship and creative expression. We've always been at the tail end of it, which is we gather the published material, but increasingly it's important for us to work directly with researchers in compliance requirements for major NSF and NIH funding, for developing data management plans, for looking at how to manage information as you build your stuff, and also as you look at the art world, the new forms of creative expression defy the traditional scholarly models. Goal four is to, there is an increasing emphasis on what are the outcomes of education at research institutions such as Cornell, and we want to dramatically link our programs to direct impact on how well undergraduate, professional and graduate students do in their work. Number five is to, as we have fewer libraries than physical on campus, we need to build better capabilities within them and pay particular attention to the virtual libraries that replace some of them. So, for instance, the entomology library will be moving into main library in the summer of 2012. In the meantime, we will unveil a virtual library with the possibilities of marrying up those gazillion insect specimens that we have with the documentation within, and also the biodiversity heritage international databases that are there. So I think there can be some value adds in the physical as well as the digital world. We also want to look at better facilities for managing and manipulating data and digital resources. Goal six, we are proudly the land-grant institution not only for New York State, but more broadly through the world. We have a strong funding from Gates Foundation to bring agricultural literature to Africa and the Middle East and South America, which would cost any of those institutions about $1 million, and we offered for $5,000 for them through negotiations with publishers. But this may be of interest to some of you beyond the international domain is that as you get ready to have Cloak Day to graduate, we're working hard to continue to provide access to scholarly resources in what I'm characterizing as the gap years, the first couple of years out of school. So you, as you're looking for a job or as you're preparing for the first couple of years advancement, you have the access to the richness of the. And then finally, goal seven really focuses on an organizational culture that recognizes that the library is probably the fastest changing entity on campus, and that we need to have a much better engagement with our constituents in providing services that meet their specific needs. That's it. On the page I gave you is the URL for the strategic plan itself, and we have
thank you. So I'd like to start and just thank you for telling us some of these incredible initiatives that are going on in the library, because I had no idea these were happening. I think it'll truly benefit students. So thank you very much for that. Again, if there's anybody in the audience, raise your hand. I'll be happy to recognize you. But first off on the speakers list is Representative Agard. Next is Representative Smith.
How many bottles are we actually going to lose? Because much of the budget looks like
will be returned back to the company article instead of the small space.
Thanks for asking that question. You know, as I have looked at a number of libraries going virtual, I'm really pleased that the Fine Arts Library will be firmly embedded in both physical and digital resources and capabilities. So the future of that is quite interesting, particularly as we look to become the best in the world. Because RAND, we will be moving to RAND, and they have low barrier floors, we'll actually be able to return most of the books that will be there. There is a disconnect between the communities right now on how many books to put in there versus how much user space to have available for group and individual work and that sort of thing. There'll be a ton of work. Some people will be happy, others won't, but we're pretty committed to returning the community.
Is there anybody in the audience who'd like to ask a question? All right, we'll move to the last question. Representative Bajaj.
Thank you so much for your presentation, Kenny. I have two quick questions. One, could you elaborate more on the CFOG partnership?
Yes.
And then number two, if you had any update on the construction currently in Olin Library and whatnot. I don't know very much about the situation, so if you could just elaborate on that.
Okay. Thanks for those two questions. Chiang Mai is variously ranked number two in China. Kind of the MIT, but it has aspirations to take on Beidou in terms of comprehensive. Because we've built this really special relationship with them, they're willing to intercede on our behalf to open up their special collections to Cornell scholars, both on-site, but we're also going to develop a special Chinese portal, which will bring together the materials from the Watson collection here and also their special collections there. We're designing the subject portal right now. I expect over the next year or two that more of their material will be put online. We're looking carefully at how to complement the materials at each of these institutions so that we build strength for both. In terms of the Olin Life Safety Project, it's moving along. We should be finished by the summer with all of the folks out of there. It's not pretty, but it will be a safe place to work. We are hoping to do some programmatic upgrades. We'll be pleased to know we're looking at how to bring electrical supplies to all of the floors so people can actually bring their computers in, like Olin just celebrated its 50th anniversary, and that was before the electric technology, the latest cutting edge. And I'm also very conscious of looking at more group study rooms. I'm trying to bring all of the staff that are on the fifth floor and the seventh floor down to the second floor and free up more of that space for users.
Just as a follow-up, going back to the CFOS partnership, you mentioned Cornell scholars. Does that include current Cornell students, or is that?
I think you all are scholars. Gentlemen and scholars in general.
All right. As these developments, progress, please let us know. We'd be happy to push out any information you have to students. And thank you again for coming today.
Yes, thank you.
All right, we have two more updates from assembly members. Please make them short because we have some very important resolutions to get to today. So, first up, Representative Smith, AAP update.
Essentially, very quick update. We were meeting with Rand Company, and like I said, some of you guys mentioned after our debacle with the Gemini, we're dealing with this issue. We are finally launching a new advisory structure. We are launching a mentorship program with applications. We reviewed it and we sent it out this week. So all of students will be, all current students will be able to sign up to be a mentor to prospective students and provide communication. And of course, any current students who want to have a mentor can sign up to get an upper class mentor for them for their next year. We haven't expanded the program to the graduate program just yet because we're trying to work out some issues we have. But that's really the big update. We'll have to be doing a lot more information on it. And Tim unrelated to that board is there, by the way, the American Indian Program. Cal has rescinded their proposal and given us an alternative where we will just lose it. Not really sure, but other groups in Cal will have access to the room by scheduling user funds. We will vote on that as a community tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. In Harbor Hall.
Are there any quick questions? Seeing none, we'll move to the last announcement or report. Elections update by Director of Elections, Fang.
What's up, everybody? So I'll keep this short. Candidate profiles will be released tomorrow before the elections meeting, which is going to be 5 o'clock tomorrow in Willard Street Hall. I believe it's the International, it's the Art Gallery, actually. In terms of how many people are running right now, we have 5 people running for 4 UA spots and 36 people running for 22 other positions. Out of those 22 other positions, unfortunately, there are 2 seats that are actually open and are not going to be filled. They're going to be filled by a special election in the fall. So the reality is 36 running for 20 spots. So a competitive election looking forward, and it's about it.
All right. Thank you. Next up, new business, Resolution 56, the Hangovers SAFC SA funding decision. Would all respective parties please step forward? So, unless there are any objections, I'm going to move Resolution 56 to business of the day so that we can settle this issue today. Seeing no dissent, we have to move to business of the day. So please present your resolution. You have 4 minutes.
Okay, I'm just going to briefly kind of lay out the situation, and I'm going to pass it over to the Hangover to kind of go over this whole thing. And this has kind of been something that we've been dealing with over the last 2 or 3 weeks, so when they make their presentation on, be sure to write down some dates and information so it can get pretty complicated. But essentially, just Hangover had booked for this group to come, and they now the group is essentially just asking for the money that they were owed to them, and then the group had issues with meeting the deadline to submit reimbursement documents. And so that's kind of the dilemma we're in now, and we can discuss after the kind of laid out the situation. So,
I'm Jordan Toad, that's what it's called. It started on November 15th. I found out that the show was the group that was our guest for our concert. I emailed them trying to get funding documentation to the FASC, and they informed me they do not have a tax ID number for their group. And then the big problem is you can use a W-9 form to the documentation for a guest group. The very next day, I visited Terry Hector at the FASC, and she told me to have a show to call her. I let them know that I put them in contact with Terry Hector. They, over the next few days, they talked to her. On November 29th, I got a generic FASC reminder that funding documentation is beginning the following week. So I checked up at the Sherwood to see how things have gone with Craig Ecker. They told me that they would be paid. They told me that they assured me that things were in the process. They were going to send checks from Craig Ecker. The deadline for funding documentation was December 8th. The deadline passed, I didn't hear anything from either of the two parties. On December 20th, the Sherwood contacted Terry Hector, and she informed them that he had not submitted paperwork. On the 6th, January 6th, Terry Hector contacted me for the first time since I spoke to her on November 15th. She told me that the Sherwood were requesting payment from her, but she didn't have any documentation from us. It was the first that I'd heard that we had any documentation to submit. The Sherwood said incorrectly informed me that they were going to be send checks by Terry Ecker and everything was all set. Between January 3rd and January 20th, I did not have a very good email access because I was on tour with the Glee Club in California. During that time, I sent out a few emails to the Sherwood and to Terry Ecker and various groups and learned timeline of what they're discussing and what has come out of that. And I found out that they called Terry after immediately after I asked them to. They talked to Terry after, and she said that she was going to contact the Hanging Effect, the advisor, which to my knowledge she did not. They spoke again later and eventually found out that we had missed the deadline for our documentation. After the 20th, I thought it was back to tour. I emailed SAC, but Terry after asked me to see if we could possibly sue the phone. And at that point,
so essentially, this is a very different issue than we normally hear, because we normally are dealing in issues of allocation and getting documentation to be approved for the allocation plan. And so this is different because at the end of the semester, there's a deadline to submit documentation to get reimbursed or to pay. So basically, to take money that you can allocate out of the account. And so essentially, after this issue kind of couldn't be resolved at the FASU level, the FA had interpreted an email from the FASU that basically forwarded this issue to us. And on some level it was somewhat of a miscommunication, but essentially we took that as we should hear this concern that this group couldn't submit documentation by the deadline, which the appropriations committee felt, and kind of figure out what should you do here. And so, drawing your attention to the resolution, finally, the second paragraph denoted what the appropriations committee had written up and sent to the Hanovers, and essentially saying, we believe that the Hanovers were wrong, that the FASC did not err in what they had done in denying them. However, $5,500, we felt, was an undue burden to be put on a group, even though they had messed up. And so we felt to prevent this issue, a moral hazard that would just help them out even though they screwed up, we would put on a punitive measurement group, limiting their spring 2011 FASC allocation. And essentially, that punitive measure looked somewhat complicated, and that was just due to the committee members not wanting the group to suffer all that much. And so it basically puts the minimum ceiling on how much they can receive at 2,000. And if you're curious, you can ask a follow-up question. So the only thing that's different between what the appropriations committee said and what this resolution is calling for is where the money, the $5,500 to pay for the Sherwood, the alumni that we have to come, where it's coming from. And so after communication, kind of after the committee heard this, and this was forwarded to the office for approval, after the office, the FASC and the FA communicated and talked together, and there was an agreement reached that the FA would cover 50%, so $2,750, that's $550 out of its surplus, which we currently have about $15,500, and then the other half would be covered from the FASC kind of pool of money, so they have $1 million. Approximately to allocate over the entire given year, and it would come out of that goal fund. And so essentially, we're submitting this to the student assembly because this is coming out of those kind of that surplus funds that need to be voted on by the members. So this is kind of a complex issue, and please, you know, feel free to ask me qualifying or clarifying questions as you need to kind of see through this issue.
Okay. So now I'm going to actually ask the SAC co-chairs to please step forward, you know, pull up your chairs, get comfortable at the table, please make room. And at this point, before we have the co-chairs explain the situation from their perspective, are there any questions on the process by which this resolution has come about? All right, go ahead, Representative Smith.
I don't know if the question would think that Terry actually had to be here, because I feel like her name has been thrown around for months and everybody, and she did this and she did this and she did this.
Yeah, I think like I think the co-chairs are representing her, but...
The SAC can represent the ARIA chair as well, so that's kind of in the... everyone's able to join the team.
All right. So, and from... There was some discussion on the charter, how the process by which this resolution comes about, the authority of the allocation of these funds. There's a long discussion about it, and because there is no process outlined for the disbursement of SAF funds from the SAFC, the conclusion that we're coming to as an executive board of the student assembly is that because the SAFC is a committee of the student assembly, their budget is purview to the oversight of the assembly, just as is any other committee. And that's where we are deriving our authority to judge on this matter. But note, you are making precedent. The SA has never done this before on the disbursement of funds, and I think that the co-chairs are going to discuss more about that precedent. But that is where we're deriving the authority for the allocation and the decision here. So I'm going to open it up now for the co-chairs. If you could please explain your perspective.
Also, the treasurer has been the treasurer of this group for four semesters, so we would assume that she was fairly familiar with the policies of the SAFC and how reimbursement works. The deadline was December 6th for reimbursement paperwork to be submitted. No documentation has ever been submitted. It's been 2 months over that, and still nothing has been given to our office. We also wanted to bring up the fact that we've had over $170,000 reversed from last semester to this semester because the group didn't use that money, or they used that money but they didn't submit their reimbursement form in time, so they did not get reimbursed. And so we're kind of curious why one particular group is getting helped out when there are probably other groups that did not get fully reimbursed. And the rules that apply to SAFC funds apply to all groups that use those SAFC funds. And that's also a reason why we think that we have discretion over what happens to the funds, because SAFC rules apply to those funds in the office. And we just want to remind you that this is setting precedent, and if we do decide to reimburse them, you're probably opening up a whole range of problems. You're probably going to face this issue more often in the coming semester. And we would also be curious, if you do decide to have this, is there just like no deadline as to when the documentation now needs to be submitted?
All right. I'm going to allow the hangovers 30, or I'm going to allow you a minute to touch on the point of documentation and why no documentation was submitted, and then we're going to go into questions from assembly members. If you have a point of information about process, please direct it to me if you're ever unclear on process. And you don't need to be on the speaker's list, just raise your hand, point of information, and I'll recognize you. Because we just want to make sure that everybody understands the process. But if you have a question about the specific situation, then please raise your hand and I'll put you on the speaker's list.
Point of information.
Yes.
So if this resolution fails, just nothing happens.
So if this resolution fails, then, and so the SAFC has already ruled that this group should not be funded. So then if this resolution fails, then this group is not funded, and they, and therefore, what? And this needs a simple majority to pass, yes. So because the Appropriations Committee does not have the authority to make this decision, it's simply presenting the resolution in front of the Appropriations Committee like you present any resolution. It has to go to committee first. And so this is what, this is the committee's recommendation on what to do in the situation. Yes.
Sorry again. If we had considered the SAFC a committee of the student assembly, isn't their decision also like a decision of the Appropriations Committee, which needs 2/3 to overturn?
Yes, but their charter specifically states that it requires you only a majority to overturn the SAFC's decision.
Okay.
The charter specifically states that. Point of clarification.
And, yeah, and just, you know, one more thing on the process. First, obviously majority, because we're taking out of the majority surplus funds since the Appropriations Committee doesn't have the authority to rule on, so it's another reason. But, you know, just for full disclosure, the process for disbursing funds is not written anywhere. It's not written in the SAC. Technically, doesn't have anywhere written authority or anything like that. So there's no process. So we basically took the parallel process that allocations are brought up for appropriations and then to the full FA, and the appropriations in this case made a determination by asking the following question of, you know, what would be the best outcome for students on benefit cost analysis, and as students figuring out what's going to be happening with student money, what would be the outcome for all parties involved. So there is no written process.
I would say actually the only written process is that groups have to turn in documentation by the deadline. That is the only process that is written. There's no appeals process for it, technically. And that's why this is unprecedented. Because we're hearing an appeal on a process, on a situation that we've never heard an appeal before. So I'm actually going to go, I'm going to ask the first question. I'm going to keep time pretty strictly, and I'm going to give myself a minute and 30 seconds. Yeah.
Point of information, just to clarify what was said earlier. So the deadline for reimbursement is December 6th. And you were first contacted at the first time on December 20th about
that
it.
That was what Terry asked
for. Okay.
All right. So I will give the group 2 minutes. The question is, why have you not turned any documentation? And what when was your first point of contact? What date with the office to attempt to get reimbursed?
We have submitted some documentation. We have submitted proof of the advertising, which is about half of the documentation. The only thing that has not been submitted is the legal form, and if it's necessary, the W-9 form. And that hasn't been submitted because the children would like to wait until the outcome of this event right here to see if they need to get us that documentation, because it would be a half of them to do so. My first contact with the SAFC after I found out that we had not, like we could be admitted to the deadline for funding documentation, was on, I believe, an email from Terry after on January 3rd, which I got back and we talked more on January 6th. The Sherwin told me before the January 6th or 8th, that number is not really important, I contacted them at the very end of November, and they showed me incorrectly that they were going to send money from the FASC. And it appears that they had not even contacted the FASC by that point. They told me very confidently, and I had no reason to disbelieve them, and I thought the matter was closed at that point.
All right. Do you want to touch? You had your hand raised. You have a minute. Thank you. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Block.
Okay, I'm not trying to take a point of information, but I guess I'm just wondering why did the FA's money come into talks with this? Like, I guess, so was the money was allocated, so you guys were told you had this money, but then you spent it and now you're not
I'll answer this question. It came out of the discussion with the office and the SAFC. Because we are creating precedent here and because there was no process, there's a lot of hesitation on does the SA have authority to do this, what should be the ramifications for the SA, because we don't want, we are, if you look at the situation from the SAFC's perspective, we are essentially saying we are going to waive the rules that we told you to follow, and we are going to, without any process, we're going to take a shot in the dark and just do whatever we want here. And so because of the lack of process, we're putting some of the burden on funding the group on ourselves, and hopefully that'll motivate us to also create a process for in the future.
Okay. I guess just because in hearing this, I feel like everyone agrees that they deserve the money. I just don't understand. I would think I've had a program, you guys should get money for it. I just don't. Is there no way to fully fund it from that SAFC?
So this was, again, and so you can motion to amend. There's nothing from the chair nor anybody to stop you from motioning to amend. But I would caution you that this document came about as a result of multiple hours of discussion before we brought it to the floor because of the complexity of the matter. So you can motion to amend, yes, but this document has been agreed upon by a number of parties.
Okay, and so the money that is not used, if it's not being claimed by the hangovers, does that just roll over into next year through the SAFC?
I mean, what happens is that the unspent funds get reverted back to the commission at the end of each semester. So the funds have already been reverted back. They've been taken out of their account and are going to be used in allocations, which will be released on this Monday.
All right, so their money is already going to be reallocated?
It's going to be reallocated on Monday.
And
it goes back into the pool of money that we use to allocate this company.
All right, next on the speaker's list is Representative Mensa, or EVP Mensa.
Thank you. Yeah. I just want to say, I do firmly believe that it is in the power, within the authority of this body to rule on this issue, not only as this body is given the authority to allocate the SAF, but the fact that the body also has oversight over the SAFC. Myself personally, I would like all of the funds to come from the SAFC, we did go through some lengthy process in coming to this agreement, tentative agreement here, and so, but at the end of the day, I don't think that, it would be wise for us as an assembly to basically tell an organization that they're stuck with $5,000 bill. I don't think that that's wise. We understand that this can't happen in every situation, and but this situation now, we do have the funding for it. There are the funds for it, and I think that the group should be funded. And as I understand, some rule change or a process change next year would make this situation basically impossible to happen. Maybe VP Nicoletti can touch on that point. And then just to follow up with that, just in light of that information, I don't really see a huge problem with funding this organization.
So, to address what EVP Mensa is talking about, in the SAFC ad hoc committee last fall, which will be comprised of SAC, the office, and SA members. One of the really positive things that we recommended was that there was no rollover or no reversion of funds between the fall and the spring, which is what happened. The funds reverted at the deadline on December 8th. And so essentially, in the future, once we pass the new SAC guidelines, this won't be the case because groups will have their money the whole academic year once they get there. And reversion is only going to occur at the end of the academic year, at the end of the spring. So this issue is really the last time, hopefully, that we'll have to deal with this in the middle of the fall and spring.
Next on the speaker's list is Representative Desai. That's where you are on the speaker's list. Speaker's list is Representative Bajaj.
Yeah, there is a new measure on the clause 2. It says 2500 minus the normal cap. The normal cap minus 7.
Are you asking about punitive measures?
Yeah, sorry. Okay. I'll read the second where I clause 2.
Yeah.
It says that the cap is 2500 minus the normal cap.
So,
I think it's reversed, right?
No.
Am I confused?
Yeah.
Adam,
you mean the reverse.
Yeah, I think the reverse.
I'll explain the key.
We have to clarify it in this resolution. So if you can come up with an amendment, and I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was my point.
Oh, that wasn't your point. All right, then go ahead.
So my understanding of the situation is that a group that follows the rules, they are on the hook for $2,000. It is within our power to reverse, depending on the hook. But I still feel that, as the guy has said, that because they didn't follow the rules that all other groups did, you know, all the groups to my knowledge, and on the board members, they didn't follow the rules, there should be some repercussions for that action, such that a group doesn't turn in the money and, you know, appeal their trends that have to go through on the NSA and so on and so forth to reverse the decision unilaterally. So I agree with the co-chairs that there needs to be some way to prevent this happening to other groups, and I strongly believe that the punitive measure, you're essentially taking their $500 from their spring allocation and putting it toward the past purchase, is my understanding of the situation. And I think that in that sense, you save having to pay $500. In the end, we're not business people, we try to look at thousands of those standards, but we are students on loans and via budgets and whatever. There are certain like human elements that you have to consider. So I think that this resolution is a strong compromise in between, you know, remembering that this group of people that need this funding, that already happened, it wasn't success. But at the same time, that there is a punishment for them not following the rules. And
That's time. So if you would like to respond.
Yeah, so I'll motion to. I mean, okay, so I'm just going to see, because I write it the same way in the Be a Circle resolve. Okay, so. So I guess in both the whereas clause and the Be a Circle resolve clause, we're going to be swapping $5,500 and the normal cap. So we'll read. The Hangover Springs Govern 11 SAFC allocation will be capped at either the normal cap minus $5,500 or $2,000, whichever is greater. And thank you for pointing that out. And that's the point of that is to make sure that the group, the minimum cap is
$2,000. Okay. Alright. We have that was a motion to amend. Is there any dissent to that amendment? It's a clarification amendment. Seeing none, the amendment is passed.
That was my calling question.
Oh, the amendment. Okay.
Another amendment.
All right. Hold on. I am going to continue on the speakers list. I'm putting you on the second speakers list. And if you'd like, if somebody would like to grant Representative Block time to make his amendment, feel free. But I don't have to recognize him unless you're on the speaker list. Representative Rao.
So I just have a question for the SAFC, and we fund you guys every other year, give you a lot of money to allocate to student groups. Now there's $170,000 from the fall to spring, and we're discussing using the very small SA budget to fund this group. I was wondering if this $170,000 can be allocated on Monday, regardless of your ideological opposition to funding this group. Is it physically possible to use some of that money to fund this group?
It's physically possible, but it's
All right, next is Representative Cruz. Oh. I'll give you 30 seconds.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
My question to the AFC is this $5,500 that already being promised? And so what would be the harm in the long term in terms of the budget if we've already planned on not having this additional $5,500 in with the allocation for the spring? Because you already, after the dispersal of the fall, you have to set the initial budget for the spring. So this is icing on the cake, so to speak, because you already promised more money over the next
Next on the speaker's list is Representative Smith. Let's do one at a time, and I'll give you extra time. So, point of information, do you know if they've actually, if they're actually responsible for paying, or like if those events occurred and they're responsible for paying receipts?
No, we don't, because they don't submit payment requests generally after the deadline, because they know that they will not be
able to pay. Okay.
Or they have them.
Okay. To the chair. I'm assuming that you don't know the exact figure, correct?
Organizations aside from recruitment do not receive funds allocations for advertising. We have a different way of handling those that are actually allocated.
Okay. Next question.
Okay. I'm looking up on the table. Other than this great conference that you guys are talking about, I'm sorry, I don't really know how much stuff you do correctly with that. What limitations are going to be, what other limitations are going to be in place for you? Is it going to be, are there going to be an overall lack of, you know, are you not going to be able to do a whole bunch of different things?
The Hangovers are planning a tour to the United Kingdom, I think, with a bunch of Cornell alumni establishments. And we won't be able to do that. We won't be able to stay with Cornell Club in New York City because we won't have gas money to reimburse our drivers. So you're not looking for a weekend.
Generally, our concerts are really our own funding.
Alright. And is it possible that a number of groups will not be coming on Monday, that are leaving more of a circle? Or not? Well, I don't know if this whole thing is going to be out of money to leave our own circle.
Sorry. So, what happens is we go through the budget and we allocate them as if we have like a 10 minutes amount of money, and then we go back and see where we need to cut, where we need to tap. On all the groups, because we've been requested, I believe, in between $700,000 and $800,000, and we don't have that much money right now. So there are going to be caps that are put in place. And without getting into too many details about it, basically there are caps that are put on different organizations, and then there's a certain percentage of those funds that are put aside to deal with appeal requests as well as special.
And then one more question if you have one. Okay. Can you keep them 30 seconds or short?
Just briefly. Again, I really don't know. I'm not too sure why I'm saying this right now because I'm kind of torn. I feel like it's wrong to just give the bird back to them after we told them these are the rules. You know, I feel like it's wrong if we make them drink it.
we are taking something in that sense. Other groups support it. I'm not looking at the documentation on time anymore. And also, I don't necessarily agree with the SA as a body selling out the surplus, selling out our surplus that we have. And when last week we just said we aren't using the money for programming outreach, like we should be doing the first thing. So I was, you know, I don't think this money should be bailout money.
All right. Next on the speaker's list, and last on the first speaker's list, is Representative VP Gitlin.
I was just wondering what. Actually, I'll yield my time.
Are there any motions? All right, Representative Block.
I have a motion to amend that.
All right, could you give me a specific specific wording?
I guess you mean final release of the resolve on the SAFC to be 5,500 on the SAFC. Compensation sure was as originally allocated as the answer to the SAFC.
Second.
So there's been a second and dissent, but there's no real need for dissent. You can just speak because we're opening a new speakers list and we're not voting. So we are now going to the new speakers list. Representative Jenkins. You're up. All right, thank you. I am reducing speaker times to 1 minute. Representative Block, please explain your...
Okay. I'm just going to talk about why I thought this. First off, we're not funding the SAFC. The SAFC is there to get money for the Secondly, the SAFC never really spent money. Our purpose is specifically not to give money to organizations. So I think that any money that we give is setting a bad precedent. And more importantly, even though yes, they understand that they broke the rules, in the end of the day, this assembly should be about what's best for the student body. And I think that we're not encouraging people to keep doing this because we're going to still punish them under this amendment. It's just that we're taking the money from the SAFC. And I think that it's a much better allocation of the money. Because at the end of the day, if we do this, we can help them. They can pay for them something so they don't have to shell out their own money. That's good for the student population. And we don't set this precedent on the student assembly. More importantly, the SAFC had $170,000 in excess money, of which they'd be paying $5,500, whereas the entire assembly's budget is about $50,000.
Well, 30 with plus a surplus.
Okay, so essentially it makes sense to give it from the SAFC. Because the fact that that's their purpose, we're not punishing them, that's their job.
That's 10 seconds.
And more importantly, at the end of the day, it's not good. I don't believe that they should be shelling out this money, but I do believe that we do need to shell out the money.
And that's time. The SAFC?
I think in regards to the student assembly not being charged to giving students this money, I agree with that. I think the situation here is rather that this student group is coming to the student assembly with a problem, right? We went through the student assembly buying information. We did a great job on our end. We tried our absolute best. We adhered to the guidelines. And unfortunately, this group did not have the documentation necessary. Right? At this point, they're coming to the student assembly for help basically on your end. It would be a punishment on our end because we did try our best in the beginning to fund this group. It's just that they didn't commit the proper documentation to do that. Right?
All right. I'm going to continue on the speakers list. Representative Bajaj.
The point I was just actually making to Representative Jenkins is an important one, and I'll make the full body. They're not, I agree with the amendment. I think it's a good one because the SAFC isn't losing really money in any sense because 1,500 is coming out of this grant. allocation. The punitive measures kind of shift the spirit of this resolution from us shelling out money or us making an exception, saying, well, they need this money to pay for this group because otherwise the office of the group will be, you know, on the hook for the money. And instead, let's take the money out of what they would be getting in the spring, assuming that they get to be somewhere near the cap, to pay for what they've done already, which is bad, because that was very bad. And they're going to be, I mean, the government will probably cover this, I don't want to share, but they will be put in the limelight for this. And, you know, that's both worlds. What they did was
20 seconds.
They will still, their offices won't be on the financial hook or end of the hook, but no, they have to get punished. I mean, I think this amendment makes the most sense, and the whole resolution makes sense.
All right, I'll give you 30 seconds, please. Thank you.
Point of information?
Yes.
Are you speaking as a member of the Hangovers, as a member of the SA? I'm kind of confused.
That was one kind of
point of order.
So I would assume that since Representative Kerr is a member of the Hangovers, that he'll abstain from voting on this resolution, but he's allowed to speak in whatever way he wishes. Next is Representative Smith.
Again, I'm just not. It seems like in certain ways that they're almost in it. You heard how much
maybe they requested of them this semester,
and they don't have enough to cover that. And then I don't know. We say the community damage is off or whatever. Yeah, sure. At the same time, I still think it would be. You know, I'm really not sure. I think you guys are right. I think we can all agree you guys are right. We spent so long, the debate was so
20 seconds.
When we sat there and had to follow through with the SASB, we went through and, you know, people were making changes to all the stuff that they worked hard to come up with. And I just think, you know, I'm just like, why are we not going to follow those rules and make people report, like, submit the documentation that they got to submit? So,
all right, thank you. I'll give the sponsor of the amendment 30 seconds. Please make it quick.
Okay, I'll just try to finish this up just about the following week. I understand that they broke the rules, but obviously hindsight's always better, and clearly we're trying to change things in the way they work now. So I think that what's most important is that even though we do make the rules, the most important thing is that we interpret the rules, and we interpret the resolutions that we're given as to what's best for the student body. And I think that in this instance, it is best that we do without the passive amendment and pay for it, because it really does help out the funds.
You have 30 seconds.
At the time, it was unclear exactly what documentation was needed to be submitted, who exactly I could make out the receipt of the form 2, and I was waiting to hear that from Terry after or Schroeder. Especially because they hadn't checked that, that is what is at the center of all this, and that's what made it different than
10 seconds.
Any other thing, a special sort of case. I didn't really know what to do with the president on that.
All right. Thank you. Next is Representative Danzier.
So can you all first just like take a breath for a second, because I think we're getting really upset at each other for really no good reason. I will say, first of all, $170,000 rolled over from last semester. Chances are there's going to be some amount of money, at least $5,000, that rolls over at the end of this semester. And I'm pretty sure that rolls back to the SAF rather than rolling over, right? The SAF, if a group doesn't use their SAF, if the
FASC
doesn't use their SAF,
where
does that go?
30 seconds. Oh, wait. What?
If the FASC doesn't use their SAF at the end of the year.
At the end of the year, it rolls over to the next academic year.
Fine. I will say that we are taking 30, let's say the cap is $5,500. We're taking $3,500 from the hangovers and giving it back to the FASC by the punitive measures that we're taking. So we're already giving the FASC back money that they wouldn't have had previously. So why we're paying for this with money that we can put towards a project, you know, how many
15 seconds.
Zip Ride, which is now sponsored by the university, was originally an SA project, funded by our special fund. So to just throw money at student groups, I think that's a more dangerous precedent than having the SASC, which is supposed to fund student groups.
All right, thank you. That's your time. Yes.
How much money has come out of your budget that we have to do like last year that actually went towards outreach events and everything like that?
I can't give you the exact number how much was spent last year, but this year we have had a little bit over $1,000 because we had CCC and a few other events before. But I would also like to note that the assembly is, I think, 6,000 short of its allocated yearly budget. But because we have rollover from last year, if we spend that $6,000, then we'll start eating into our surplus. So we have already spent more than half of our yearly allocation in one semester, essentially. So if we continue on that projection, we will necessarily have to eat into the surplus.
I have a motion.
You have a motion, yes.
I'd like to call the amendment to question. Second.
All right, the amendment has been called to question. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll? Oh, wait, hold on. I'm going to give the speaker. Actually, no, I'm just going to go straight to a vote. I would suggest that you do not, because you are involved intimately in the... But I would still say that he's involved in the matter, so I would ask that you... No, I want this on the record. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Just said yes.
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 Yep.
Yes.
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 Abstain.
Yes.
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 By a vote of 11-0-2, the amendment passes. We are now on the main motion. Representative Gitlin is the last person on the speaker's list. Second.
Second.
There's been a call to question and a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
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 Abstain.
No.
No.
Yes.
By a vote, yes, that's four. By a vote of 8-2-3, the resolution passes. The hangers have their money. And with that,
thank you.
I call for adjournment.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.